and mentioned that we're in ordinary time. And what came to mind this morning is it's Monday after Independence Day, and in the old days, this would have been the beginning of the school year. At least when I first came to the Philippines, this time of year, the whole early part of June was all about back to school and sales and enrollments and everything to do with school. I don't know what's going on now with schools, because even before the pandemic, the school years were shifting, the schedules were all shifting. And then with the lockdowns, who knows what is school anymore? People go to school online, or they have modules. So anyway, everything's topsy-turvy, as we know. It's not ordinary. And that can be disturbing, but it's also a reminder to us that our Christian life is not simply ordinary either. The gospel overturns lots of things that we would think of as normal, and that's deliberate. We started reading last week from the Sermon on the Mount, and we realized this is a revolution. The Sermon on the Mount is a revolution. It overturns what we would think of as normal life and normal behavior, normal ways of thinking. We're going to continue reading from the Sermon on the Mount this week as well, with all its challenges and all its bizarre conclusions. But we can see in today's first reading how living according to this revolution, it sets up extraordinary paradoxes. This is St. Paul writing to the Corinthians. And he says, well, now is a good time to turn to the Lord. And now it's the day of salvation. It's not an ordinary time. It's a time of grace. And so he says, don't waste the moment. It's a very acceptable time right now, today, day of salvation. Grab this opportunity to find new life in God. And then he goes on to describe this life, and it's all sorts of contradictions. It's both great and terrible. And so he goes on to what his ministry, he has a whole list of things that characterize his ministry. Some of them are terrible, hardships, afflictions, imprisonments, riots, and all these things. And some of them are great. Unfeigned love, the Holy Spirit, truthful speech, the power of God. And at the end of the reading, the longer you read this or the more you ponder this, you say, this man, Paul, has experienced life being turned upside down, and he thinks it's great. So at the end of the reading, he says, well, here we are. We're treated as deceivers, and yet we are truthful. We're unrecognized and yet acknowledged as dying, and behold, we live. So what looks like death to the world is really life. What looks like death to our nature, really life. Chastised, yet not put to death, sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, poor, yet enriching many, as having nothing and yet possessing all things. Well, what is he talking about? How can you have nothing and everything at the same time? Well, that's what the life of faith does. It frees us from attachment to the things of this world, even to attachment to our own body and our own life, and then fills us with a higher life. So that even if, in the eyes of the world, we have nothing, in fact, we have everything. Because if we have God, we have everything. Well, that's the revolution. And Paul is living it, so he can simply sit down, he's writing a letter, he can simply list all these paradoxes, because this is his real experience of life. Well, we are being schooled in this way, this paradoxical way of the gospel, and we continue to ponder the Sermon on the Mount. In the Sermon on the Mount, as we saw last week, there are some things that are just surprising. I mean, they make sense to us, but they're challenging. Like when Jesus said, You've heard it said, you shall not kill, but I say, you don't harbor anger in your heart or abusive language. That makes some sense to us. Of course, it's not good to live in constant anger and resentment and cursing people. We can recognize that. But there are some things in the Sermon on the Mount that just don't seem reasonable to us. And today's reading is one of them. Tomorrow is even worse from the natural standpoint. So today's reading, Jesus says, you have heard this law of the talion, they call it, the law of retaliation, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, yes, we've heard that, and it sounds terrible to us, but when it was first introduced in the Old Testament, it was a system of limiting retaliation. So don't go overboard. If someone knocks out your tooth, well, don't knock out all his teeth, just one. It's kind of to even things out. So when it was introduced, it was a step forward. We look at it as a kind of savage, a brutal system of justice. We say, well, when someone knocks out your tooth, well, you take them to court and say, you know, you broke the law and you have to pay a fine or pay some expense or go to jail. So we think of a justice being established through the system of the courts. Well, at least we hope that they work. But we don't think of simply knocking people's teeth out or blinding people who have blinded us. But Jesus, instead of saying, let's balance out everything with justice, he says, I say, offer no resistance to one who is evil. When someone strikes you on your right cheek, turn the other one to him as well. Which has to strike us as a very weird thing to do, a very strange way to live. Now, we've heard this hundreds of times. I think everybody here is very familiar with the expression, turn the other cheek. And I've preached on this dozens of times. But every time I pick it up again, I have to rethink it. What is he teaching us here? And I hope you also have to rethink it, because it is revolutionary. Now, we naturally think that we have two options when we experience injustice. First option is retaliation. You harm me, I'll harm you back. I'll just try not to overdo it. The other option is just let it go. So if I knock you down, well, then I win. If you knock me down, then you win. And that's kind of as far as we go with our human justice. Someone has to win and someone has to lose. We like to be the winners, but if we come up with someone too strong, well, then we'll just back off. Jesus introduces something completely different than that you win, I win, you lose, I lose. Completely different than that system. He says, act like God. Take a higher view of what's right and wrong and do what is good, no matter what anyone does. Do what is good, even for the other person. And that system, if you want to call it that divine approach, will always win, because good is always more powerful than evil. Truth is more powerful than lies. So it always wins. Even though it seems in the moment like a capitulation or a loss. So the idea of turning the other cheek is not simply, oh, I'll let you win, I'll let you beat me up. No. It's a turn which opens the situation to God's view. You're going to strike me? Well, wait a minute. I'm not going to strike you back, but I'm not going to back off either. I'm going to stand here and let your injustice to me penetrate your conscience. That's what turning the other cheek is all about. It's not simply letting evil people do evil things to us. That would make no sense. And it wouldn't even be good. So this idea of give to the one who asks of you, do not turn your back on the one who wants to borrow, it's not simply that you give everything to every beggar and you loan to everyone who who ask for a loan. That's what it looks like on the surface. But what Jesus is doing here is saying, no, wait a minute, evaluate these requests the way God does. Does God give us everything we beg him for? No, he doesn't. Lord, give me 10,000 pesos. Well, he usually doesn't. Sometimes he does. I mean, but because he does for us what is good, not simply what we beg for. When we want to borrow from God, Lord, give me a better job, a good day. Give me this thing that I think will be really good. And if you do, I'll serve you. He doesn't always do it. He does what's good for us. And that's the standard for our own behavior to one another. When someone comes begging, the question is not, do I have to give what he asks for or not? The question is, what's good? What is good for this person? He says he needs money because his child is in the hospital. Well, call up the hospital, see if he's really there. Find out what is the expense and what's his capacity to pay? What's the need? What's good for him? And then do what's good. So you might think I'm taking some of the punch out of this very contradictory gospel. But what I'm trying to do is show that it's not ridiculous. It's transcendent. It doesn't follow this idea that either I win or you win. It establishes a standard that doesn't come to us naturally. Only when we turn to God and realize God is good. He's our loving Father. He takes care of us, his children. And so our way of dealing with one another is based on that, not on what we think is normal, the normal flow of justice. It's very contradictory to us. It even seems ridiculous at first, but it's actually very freeing. We don't have to make everything work out. We don't have to make sure that we get what's due to us or that other people get what's due to them. We don't have to make sure of all that because it's in the hands of God. We just do our part. We do what is good for one another. So if someone needs a tunic, we say, okay, take a tunic. Or I have a cloak, I'll give you a cloak. If I don't have a cloak, well, maybe someone else will give it to you. And I'll do what I can. Maybe we'll take up a collection. So if we live by this standard, then we start to experience what Paul describes in this first reading. We're sorrowful, yet we're rejoicing. We're sorrowful because we live in a world full of injustices and suffering. And even if we ourselves might not be suffering, our loved ones are suffering. Many people are suffering. And so we're sorrowful. And yet we're always rejoicing because we know God is at work right in the midst of this suffering world. We are poor, yet enriching many. Maybe I don't have anything to give to this person in need, but I have myself. I have love. I have prayer. I have the whole community of the church. We enrich one another as having nothing and yet possessing all things. As poor as we might be, and all of us before God are very poor, because we have God, we are very rich, and we have a lot to give. Gifted to give. Gifted to give. It's the theme of this whole year, and it's a good way of understanding this paradox of the Christian life. By being poor, by being little, by being a mustard seed, by being dependent on God, we become very, very fruitful. Because God can work in us and through us.